This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Now, it's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, we had a call, a little bit of an audible. Eli Manning was scheduled at 5:40. We are going to have him right now on the Michael K. Show on his weekly segment here on the show. Eli, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing very well as well. Was that one tough for you to watch yesterday?
Yeah, it was. You know, just rooting so hard for my brother. You know, I've obviously been in a Super Bowl, and you prepare, and you know, the whole season. It's so hard. You know, it's so hard to get to that situation. So hard to get there, and you know, just felt for him. And I got to speak to him after the game for a little bit, and talk to him today, and just you know, he's doing good, but just. You know, just told him he did everything he could do, and you know, without him on that team, you know, they wouldn't be anywhere near you know what they do, what they're capable of doing, and he makes all his players so much better. The receivers, I mean, have those young receivers, and he gets everything out of all those guys, and I was proud of him the whole season, the way he competed, and you know, just what it meant to be, and the Saints played, they played really well, and offensively, defensively, they did everything right, and you know, it was just a tough game.
Now, do you think that, and you know, we asked this question to a couple of our guests, you think he was frustrated or confused with the way the Saints kept changing their defense? They went from 3-4 to 4-3, then they changed it back in the third quarter, used a combination of both. Is he used to seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I mean, it's, the Saints have done that a bunch. They can kind of switch from 3-4 to 4-down. I don't think that confuses him. I think, you know, they had a good plan. You know, it wasn't like they had guys coming in running free or you know, I think they, you know, just, you know, had a few, they didn't have many opportunities. They really didn't have many possessions. You know, they moved the ball fairly well. I think they punted one time. That's when they got backed up on their 1 yard line for the half, so you know, I think they just, you know, had a drop on one third down, a few other things, just, you know, the last drive had a drop that could have been a touchdown, but you know, they did things pretty well. It was just tough. Nothing was coming easy. You know, he had to get the ball out pretty quickly, but you know, he made some great throws, a couple of tight ones to Dallas Clark, and you know, it was just, nothing was easy, and the Saints offense just got hot in the second half, and you know, had long drives. Both teams had long drives, so there weren't many possessions in the whole game, and then the Saints getting the onside kick to start the second half just eliminated another possession for them.
Now, when you're watching, they showed you once up in the luxury box, when you're watching and Sean Payton goes for the onside kick, are you completely startled by that?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't even in my seat yet, and I was kind of walking, trying to get there, and I heard someone yell onside kick. So, I, you know, it's one of those deals it's an aggressive call, and, you know, if it works, it's a great decision. If it doesn't, it's usually a bad decision, but that's kind of the way it goes, and obviously they got it. They recovered it, so, you know, great call on his part, and very, very gutsy move right there, because obviously the Colts recovered. They got great field position and a pretty good chance to score right there.
Now, two things that I was uncertain on, and it's not fair enough to ask you, but you're with us and not Peyton. Right before the end of the first half, why did Peyton run the ball three times there instead of passing? Because they're such a good two-minute offense, and that was the one time you said they punted.
Yeah, you know, I think you just try to get the ball off the 1 yard line on the first play. They had a pretty good run play on first down. They got about 4 or 5 yards, which is, you know, all you're just trying to get a little room right there. You don't want to get a safety. You don't want to turn the ball over. You know, really on second down, they ran it again. You know, you have a third and one, and you try to run it, and just didn't get it. So, you know, I think if you pop one in there and you still have your time, you still have your timeout, you can maybe go for it after you get a little bit of room. So, you know, you can't, you know, I'm not the person to ask on that question. That goes down to the offensive coordinator and those guys who have the exact reasoning. But yeah, you know, right there, they had a big goal line stop there, but obviously had to punt back to New Orleans, and they go down and get a field goal right before the half.
Talking with Eli Manning here on his weekly segment on the mic. Okay, so what do you think, and what did your brother tell you happened on the interception? Because that was obviously a black backbreaker as they're driving to tie the game.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's one of those plays. They're plays they run all the time, and yeah, I haven't seen the replay. I haven't seen it I've been traveling all day, so you know I can't tell you know what the route was like, and you know it's one of those just kind of timing trust issues where you know the receiver's got to run and get five and come in fast, and so I think you know the play they run a lot. I think the corner jumped a little bit, but you know it's one of those it's a timing you got to throw and trust your receiver get in there, and you know I think it's just probably a good play by the cornerback and being aggressive and seeing something, but I haven't seen the route and you know exactly what happened.
All right, and talking to Peyton, he's lost playoff games before. He's 9-9. Was he really annoyed with this one? Was he disappointed? How would you describe him?
Well, I think you're always disappointed when you have such a tremendous season and get this far, get to the Super Bowl. He knows as well as anyone how difficult it is to get to the Super Bowl. Having been to the playoffs, you know, many times and been in the, you know, AFC championship games, divisional games. It's tough. It's tough on everybody. It's, you know, just to get to the Super Bowl. And, so obviously he's going to be disappointed and upset, but you know, I think the Saints—they played well. They really played pretty flawless, if you ask me. They didn't make any mistakes. They recovered the onside kick offensively. You know, the Colts couldn't get much pressure. Kind of the first couple series, they got some pressure. After that, they didn't get to Drew, and he was hitting everything, and they had good stuff, and just it was amazing. I don't know how many third downs the Saints had. They didn't have very many, especially in the second half. It seemed like they had a lot of second and twos, second and threes, and just getting first downs and moving the ball pretty effortlessly. And you know they played really outstanding and did a great job. And you know they did their part and played well and well enough to win.
Now your brother is very cognizant of his place in football history and his legacy. Do you think a loss like last night's changes the way people look at his legacy?
I don't think so. I think people they know what he's capable of doing and what a tremendous football player and quarterback he is, and you know what he's able to do with the Colts, and you know and you know he's still playing at a tremendous level. He's coming out to offer his fourth MVP, and to win a championship, it's not one position. One position doesn't you know go and win every you know win games. It's a team coming together and playing their best football at the end. And you know the Colts have been playing outstanding, but obviously the Saints played better football yesterday. That's what it came down to. And you know Peyton, he's still I think is going to be considered amongst the best to ever play, and he should be.
Now, we talk about this a lot, and we've come up with this number. If Peyton Manning wasn't on the Colts, they'd be a 6-10 team. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. No question. I think he makes every player on that team better, especially offensively. You know, he gets the most out of all his guys, and you know, the way he prepares and puts his team in situations, and some of the throws and decisions and everything he does. It's just tremendous, and you know he's got. You know, I think he's earned the respect of every coach, player, announcer, anybody who's a fan of football. He's earned the respect of anybody who has watched the game or played the game.
You're a son of New Orleans, Eli. What do you think this means to the city of New Orleans to have the Saints win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean it's you can't imagine how important it is and how big it is, and. You know what's going on in New Orleans right now. You know it's in a way you're happy for New Orleans and everything they've gone through, and to come out and get some joy. You know you're excited for the city of New Orleans, and it's a huge deal. And you know they've been great fans, and they've hung hard, and they've had an outstanding season.
Eli, so you admit Indy is clearly a better team with your brother there. How do you weigh his ability to make other players around him when people consider where he fits in the greatest quarterbacks of all time category?
Well, I think you look at what he's done, and year after year, just their record, just the amount of, you know, 12-win seasons or 10-win seasons, the years they've made the playoffs or the runs they've made, and just what he does in games and the fourth quarter comebacks. And you know this season I think the Colts had 7 kind of fourth quarter comeback wins, and you know they weren't just a dominating team. They just, you know, with him at quarterback, and they were able to win, you know, kind of a guy in the fourth quarter, they were able to win those tight games. And you know, you don't always want to be in those situations. Yeah, you like to be at the end, but you know, kind of sometimes you're not going to catch that break, or sometimes the other team's going to make the play, and that's kind of what happened the other night. And so, but you know, I think everybody, you know, if people are talking about you amongst the best to ever play, then that's a pretty good sign that he needs to be considered in that list. And you know, he's definitely earned it. And you know what, he seems to be getting better with time, and you know, I don't see him slowing down one bit.
Eli, going into 2009 with the Giants, the weakness seemed to be the wide receivers, and you took great pride in elevating them into being a weakness and then becoming the best part of the offense, and that's something your brother's done, as Bonnie said, his entire career. How much of what you did came from things you learned from Peyton?
Yeah, definitely. Just talking through, you know, to him about the off season and you know, just the work they do, and I think you know, that's something, you know, that I've learned, just on getting the timing and talk, you know, just really coaching up those guys and talking to them. And you know, it's one thing for kind of, you know, receivers can be talking to their wide receiver coach, I can be talking to my quarterback coach, and you might think everything's, you know, on the same page, but until you get them in a meeting, until you talk to them and kind of get your word to them and hear what they're saying and have them communicate directly to you, that's the only way to kind of make sure to ensure everybody's going to do the right thing, thinking the same thing. And you know, what it does, it gives you confidence in what they're doing. You're not going to be second-guessing, oh, I hope he does the right thing right now, but you're just totally, totally positive in what's going on. And it's amazing how that, you know, makes your footwork better, your mechanics, your confidence in that throw. And that's, you know, probably what I did a little bit more this year, just because we had so many young guys, and they, you know, just talking to them, talking. One of them on the sidelines, getting their feedback, you know, having meetings, just me with them, and that's something I've kind of learned through Peyton, and it's obviously paid off for him, and I think, you know, it's paid off for us this year with our young receivers, and you know, I know they're going to just continue to get better and stronger, and you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, getting started on this off season.
Eli Manning is our guest here on the Michael K Show. Should Drew Brees be mentioned in the top quarterbacks in the NFL now?
Well, yeah.
Not of all time now, right now.
Right now, yeah. I think he's definitely, I think he is mentioned. And when you talk about guys playing at the best in the league, I think there's, you know, probably no two quarterbacks playing better than what Drew and Peyton were playing this year going into the Super Bowl. And Drew played, you know, he played very well, last night. They protected well, but you know, he didn't miss any throws. You know, there wasn't like a throw that he wished he had back. He made good decisions. He got the ball out quickly, hit the backs on a lot of stuff kind of early on, but then started getting receivers and over the middle and hitting some big plays. And you know, they threw it a bunch. And you know, usually when you play the Colts, it's kind of, hey, we got to run the ball. But the Saints took a little different approach. They threw it a bunch of times, but they protected well and were able to move the ball that way.
Is there a particular nuance of Peyton's game that you see when you watch him play and you're trying to master that yourself?
Well, I mean, they just have a different approach kind of to playing. They line up and, you know, he's going to see the defense. They're going to try to get in perfect plays, and you know, that's their style of offense. And you know, that's what works for him and them. But you know, obviously you see different styles with, you know, Drew. You know, I mean, what the Saints are doing, that they're not doing as much checking and stuff. But you know, we don't do probably as much checking as they do, and we get into different formations, different personnel, and try to do different stuff like that. But you know, just his just his awareness and his ability to, you know, get up there and just manage that offense as effectively as they do, kind of in a no huddle, but get into multiple plays and making sure everybody's on the same page is pretty impressive.
Now, final thing, you've always, you know, we obviously know your family's very close and you love your brother, but today, correct me if I read you wrong, you sound pretty protective of him, as if you're almost trying to put a shell around him that he shouldn't be criticized for that loss. Am I reading you right?
Yeah, I don't think you can criticize Peyton in any way. He competed and he did everything he could and fought to the very bottom. And I'm always going to be protective of my brother, and I'm going to root for him and I'm going to you know, feel for him in tough times and so. You know, I thought he did everything he could the other day, and you know what, the Saints they did everything right, and it was they had something going for them this year. They had a little, I don't know if it was destiny on their side, but they were doing things the right way and played outstanding and deserved to win the game.
Eli, always a class act. We love having you on throughout the year, and this is the final one of the season. Hope to talk to you next year as well, but it's great having you on. We really, really do appreciate it here at 1050.
Well, it's been fun, and it's been great talking to you throughout the year, and you know, it's always more fun when the Giants are winning more games, and but you know, hopefully we'll get back to that next year.
Just want to tell you, the Giants are 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. Is that a good bet?
Yeah, put it down.
All right, Eli. Thanks a lot.
All right.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
I have an opinion here, which I know is going to get me just completely destroyed by two of the people on the show. I'm not sure about Bonnie. I don't know if she was taking notes during the halftime.
Are you done now?
Not yet. You took notes at
Why
a party.
Why are you teasing
Bonnie,
me?
You took notes at
like
a party.
It's not like I was interacting with people.
No, you were not. You had
yes,
every,
I was.
You just listed, in the first hour of the show, you listed all seven people that Drew Brees made threw a pass
for
to.
What?
You There's think no I way can't you could multitask? Have conversed. There's
I'm
no way.
I'm an excellent multitasker.
Can I tell you one thing?
There are timeouts. There are commercials.
If I had a Super Bowl party, right, and you came in to take notes, I would have thrown you out in the first quarter. I said, out. Get out of here. Get out. The Bonnie,
fact,
leave.
The fact that Bonnie was at a party, I mean, that makes me feel bad. I didn't get invited to any parties.
Yeah, I got invited to two.
I didn't get invited to any.
No.
Well, so there.
It actually was suggested to me I should walk around with a sandwich board around my neighborhood.
Really?
And say I'd like to go to a Super Bowl party, see if anybody would do anything.
Yeah. Who suggested?
I felt bad about that, though. I mean,
I girlfriend because he wanted something fun to do for the game.
All right, so here's the halftime show. The Who. Stop. Okay. Really. Stop. I mean, really.
Stop
or are we
what?
Supposed to watch it with walkers? I mean, really.
What?
Let's have something more contemporary, okay?
What do you want?
Well, first of all, The Who doesn't exist anymore. Two of their members are dead. I mean, it's like having Paul McCartney say, oh, there's the Beatles. If you have Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, would that be the Beatles? No, it wouldn't be the Beatles, because the Beatles are dead. The Who, that's not The Who.
That's not true, because in 2006 they came out with an album.
But this isn't that, the real Who.
But I understand that, but you know, sometimes band members change.
Not the real Yankees either. Oh, Joe DiMaggio's not playing anymore. Mickey Mantle's not playing.
That's ridiculous.
How do you call that the Yankees?
That's not ridiculous.
It's the same
the
thing.
The Yankees are not the Yankees.
Pete Townsend.
They're not saying that this is Babe Ruth and having somebody dress up as Babe
and
Ruth.
And no one's saying that John Entwistle is playing bass or Keith Moon's playing drums. You had Ringo Starr's son playing drums. He's fantastic. I mean, come on, Michael. The Pete Townsend writes the songs, Roger Daltrey sings them, and Pete's the second
right.
vocal in the group as it is.
Zach
There's
Stark.
No other singers.
Zach Starkey is now the drummer, and his Townsend's son is now the bass player. And they came out with an album in 2006, The Who. So
it works for me.
Band members change.
Who do you
those
want?
Those are the two iconic figures of The Who.
Well,
I mean,
all of a sudden, we've turned the halftime show at the Super Bowl into an old age home because Janet Jackson showed her boob. I mean, come on. Let's all grow up. You can have, like, contemporary. You can have the Black Eyed Peas. You can have anybody.
I'm sure they will.
But look at who they've had lately. The Rolling Stones.
Great show.
Bruce Springsteen.
Excellent.
But Bruce Springsteen's much more contemporary
Paul
than
McCartney.
The Who.
Paul McCartney. But this is The Who's last chance.
But why are we giving them a last chance?
Because listen to the crowd of people in that stadium. They sung along with The Who.
You know what? They'd sing along to John Mellencamp if you put him out there.
Yeah,
not to that point.
But not a bad idea. Not a bad idea to have Mellencamp there as well.
Stop.
I think part of it is the sensitivity to what happened a few years ago. But it's also, it's not just about the live event, Michael. Now, with the technology, these events live on forever. And 25 years from now, when they look back at that Super Bowl, they'll see that that was a relevant act. The Who is going to be part of who we are forever.
But, Don, let's be honest.
I like the Black Eyed Peas, but you
is
you don't
the Who
know.
A relevant act now?
Absolutely.
Today they're relevant.
But listen to the lyrics
listen to car commercials when they're trying to go to a little older demographic.
Watch
everybody
CSI.
Everybody knows these songs. They are singing these songs out loud, and it's going to continue to be relevant 50 years from now. The Black Eyed Peas are phenomenal, but you don't know 25 years from now are people going to know the Black Eyed Peas. They want these things to maintain their relevancy.
Well, that's
forever.
Ridiculous, though, because in the early Super Bowls, they had Up With People.
Well, because it's changed now.
Oh, it's big
they
money
They used to have
now.
Marching bands. Now things have changed. Look at the acts. Bruce Springsteen, U2, Paul McCartney. Iconic figures that will last a life.
Prince.
Next year, they're going to have an Elvis Presley revival. I don't know. I agree with you.
With me?
God, that sounds so weird. I really don't like that.
Well, what is the problem? These songs are...
Everybody that I spoke to, really, everybody, people in my age range, so from 40 to 50...
At the party you weren't at.
Why the who?
Who'd you speak to that? What party were you not at that you heard all this criticism?
I wasn't at a party. People called me up, okay? I'm not taking notes, but people call me.
Because they're yo-yos.
You're hearing two people in this room defend the Who. We know they're older. We know they don't have the top range in the vocals anymore. We understand that.
So why are they there?
Because they have time. Timeless songs. Like Don said, in 20 years from now, they could look back go, yeah, the Who was a good choice.
Five years ago, they should have Mel Torme do it, too. Be the Velvet Fog when he was still alive. I mean, come on. They're not relevant anymore.
Hey, with a good light show, Mel would have been fun.
The party I was at, the age range was mid-30s to late 40s. Nobody paid any attention to the halftime show. We had chili and chicken and snacks
and brownies.
Brownies were dessert.
Okay, sorry.
Although a lot of people may not have paid attention to it, I'm not arguing that.
You got a sick. How old is Daltrey?
I'll look it up. Probably 65.
65 years old with a perm. Come on, stop. He's got a perm.
He's got his hair.
But like Joey said, CSI, one of the biggest shows, they play the Who in the opening music.
It's a soundtrack.
Because you know what? 20 years from now, when it's in repeats, everybody's going to know who they are. It's the Who. Like I said, they're in the top four. That's never going to change.
They're in your top four.
They're in everyone's top four. It is one of the greatest, most iconic bands ever. The Super Bowl should be privileged that they actually put on an act during that show. It is amazing. All the music's relevant. As everybody's singing the words to the song.
Oh, it was great.
It's the Who.
I had a good time.
It's up there, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin. How does it leave you empty? You have no soul or lost the ability to hear.
How
do you not enjoy that?
I didn't enjoy it. First of all,
you're in the beginning of Bob O'Reilly. You don't get a chill.
They're not visually. They're not visually pleasing.
You absolutely have actually lost your mind today. Of all days, it finally happened.
Amazing. You know why?
Now it's the end of the football season, and your brain just hemorrhaged in your own skull.
And he associates to Who with what, Don?
Drugs.
Yeah, you see, he said it. That just...
Well, what, are we going to lie? It is. It's associated with drugs.
Stop it. Listen to that music.
You know what? Why don't you have Jay-Z and Beyonce come out?
Why not?
Those are acts that are relevant right
now. But why not? They're right, relevant right now.
Only hope.
I mean, the NFL. Really. They got so frightened because Janet Jackson exposed her breasts.
Thank God. Because you would put Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson in the same book. Not even paragraph or sentence as to Who. If that... ushered in Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen and Paul McCartney and the Who, thank God they did it. It was one of the great turning points in the history of the Super Bowl. Roger Daltrey, March 1st, turned 66.
That's great.
Got a perm.
Hope he lives to 104.
So do I.
And on his 104th birthday, he performs in my backyard and a million people show up because he's done things to music that nobody can even dream of. Don't mention, you know, the Black Eyed Peas and all these yo-yo acts that are here for a minute and disappear.
True.
The Who relevant for 40 years will be relevant 40 years from now. If you're 12 and you watch that halftime show, you are now a better person now than you were 24
and
hours ago.
And every 12 and 20-year-old and 25-year-old, they went to the bathroom while the Who was on.
And they
on.
Missed out. And they're going to lose the character because of it. If they have a father that cares about their well-being, sit them down and show them how things used to be. It's not about Xbox. It's not about CDs and DVDs. This is why music is awesome. They started it all.
It's about drug
and
influence music.
They were the bad boys before. That's why it's so silly. Oh, they did it because Janet Jackson exposed their breasts. The Who, they were doing wacky things back in the day, blowing up guitars, blowing up drum sets.
Although, you know what?
He didn't break the guitar.
Pete Townsend's shirt was actually coming off.
I know. He saw his belly button.
I thought we were going to see his Eminence front.
You, of all people, here's why you're so hypocritical. You stand on a soapbox and talk about Bobby Bowden should coach until he dies.
Right.
And meanwhile, you're killing Roger Daltrey for singing in front of 6 billion people because he's 66 years old on March 4th. How dare you?
Well, you're a Yankee now, so what happens when you turn 65 years old?
They'll probably push
Mr. Yankee
me.
Boy.
If you can't do it anymore, you said earlier that he's singing in a different key. He's not even singing in the key that he made.
No, he just arranged the melody to fit his vocal range.
Because he can't reach
life.
The notes that he used to, right?
But the people did for right. him, and that was great.
Well, like then they let the people sing. They're making a karaoke half.
It's like Pedro Martinez. He can't throw 95 anymore, so he changed
it around. And you want him
around.
On your team?
Right, you
not
adjust.
Now.
You okay. adjust, Michael. You
but
always
you
say
make
adjust.
Adjustments. He made adjustments.
Thank you, Don.
Let's let our listeners decide.
God
Meredith
bless
in Rockland,
record.
You're next on 1050. What's up, Meredith?
Hey, Michael. How you guys? How you doing, everybody?
Good.
Well, I am 36 years old. I love The Who. I watched it, and I almost threw up in my mouth. I did not want to watch either of them, especially Pete Townsend and his disgusting belly button all over the place. Not only that, but he couldn't even reach the notes.
He couldn't reach the notes.
No, and he sort of like, he made up his own notes. He wasn't even singing. They weren't even singing together. Roger Daltrey, I was watching with my 10-year-old son and my husband, and my 10-year-old son said, oh, my God, it looks like Grandpa. I was nauseated.
Well, let's hope your husband doesn't get rid of you, and you can't hit the notes anymore, and he's looking at your belly button.
That's right. We
no,
all at 65. For the rest
no,
of our lives.
Right. You can't
there.
Be a kid all your life, you know.
Wait, I'm not going up there pretending that I could still do something that I did 40 years earlier.
Oh, are you kidding me? They still killed those songs.
Terrible.
They did a tremendous. Oh, they're not terrible. You're
power.
Not a Who fan. You
I
don't like those
it.
Songs. They were amazing.
I sang every word to every one of those songs. I loved it. And I sat there going, oh, this is awful. They were almost as bad as they were during the concert after September 11th when they were totally off key. They were almost as bad last night, if not worse, than they were then.
Insanity.
So I was very disappointed. I thought that they should have had somebody much more, you know, today for the kids. I mean, you want to promote the NFL. You don't want to live 40 years ago.
Meredith, I love you. Call whenever you want.
Oh, goodness.
Lose the number,
goodness.
Please, do me a favor.
No,
you
call up whenever you want, Meredith.
Lose
you say,
it.
Michael yeah. said I could call whenever I want. Anytime, even off hours, they'll connect you to my cell phone. That's how together you are. Let's go to
yeah.
Rob.
That's from a guy who likes Hanson and the Partridge Family, by the way.
Right. Who stole the Hanson CD from my house? You little thief.
So I
during
to...
my Christmas party.
I didn't steal a Hanson.
You
I
did
stole...
steal.
No, I stole the Michael Bolton CD, my friend. Your other favorite artist.
Singing Build Me Up Buttercup at karaoke.
Let's goodness. Go to Rob and Miller Place. You're next on 1050.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
What's up, Rob?
Let me tell you, I'm 33 years old. That was an awesome halftime show. It wasn't meant to be on key. You have to understand the appreciation of the music. Mike, I think you're heartless at times and clueless. You dropped the ball on this one, pal.
Thank you.
Ooh,
that's rock and roll,
ooh.
Baby. That's what rock and roll is
Rob, can
about.
I ask you a personal question?
Sure, go ahead.
Were you smoking pot during halftime? Is that why you enjoyed it?
No, first quarter, Mike.
This is not Carnegie Hall.
Rob,
this is
you
not
can call
orchestra.
Whatever you want to. You can call whatever you want with a comeback like that. I'm telling you, that's the way people enjoy The Who. They get stoned.
Oh, stop
man.
It.
You know, you're embarrassing yourself.
Really I'm not embarrassed.
I wasn't ashamed of it. You can embarrass yourself all you want, but I'm attached to this embarrassment.
Pink Floyd next year.
Yeah, probably Pink Floyd.
Oh, you know what? That would be a fantastic
right.
decision.
That I would
yeah.
love.
And then we'll make it
Edgar
mandatory
Winter,
that everybody's stoned.
Not relevant enough.
As long as Roger...
if he played Frankenstein in front, I would watch the whole thing. I'll be repeated on a loop.
Really?
Better than anything else.
Why don't they get, you know, is Meatloaf going to be remembered 20 years from now?
Absolutely.
Well, why don't they have Meatloaf do it? And I love
Let's
Meatloaf.
Do Foreigner.
Why wouldn't they have Meatloaf
now,
do it?
No, Journey reunion. I wouldn't mind. No, Chicago. Get Peter Cetera and everybody.
Are you being
back.
Sarcastic? I can't
sarcastic.
Tell anyone.
I actually
here.
Like
this
Chicago.
Is the Who.
I'm not
this
a huge Who fan, though. I never have
four.
Been.
It's now, this is rock and roll.
Joey,
the essence of it.
This
what?
Is a very serious musical question. When you used to get the Who albums, right, did they have the pot in the sleeve, or did you have to buy it separately from a dealer?
You're sad.
Just wondering.
You are so sad.
I'm not
person.
Sad. I would never listen to that music. Even as a kid, I didn't like that music.
Just not liking rock and roll.
No, I like rock and roll.
Well,
I didn't like that
you
music.
You don't like rock
Give me a
and
man
roll.
You like.
Baba O'Reilly. What does
it's
that mean?
It's a classic
what
song.
What does it mean?
It's a classic
what is that,
song.
What does Baba O'Reilly mean?
What
does it mean?
What is Baba O'Reilly? That's
what
a good
is it?
Question.
What
I don't
is
know
it?
Off the top of my
you don't
head.
Know. Well, you're the biggest Who fan in the world.
I didn't say I was the
Baba
biggest Who fan in the world. But if you like rock and roll, how did you not just love the song?
Sorry.
I mean, Tommy?
Please.
It's great stuff. Baba O'Reilly
won't get fooled again. Elton John made it, not them.
Elton John.
He's the one who made it big, not them.
You're out of your mind.
You're out of your mind.
No,
you're out of order.
What
about
you?
I'm not.
Ready to take with you anywhere. It's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Now let's get some phone calls. The final score was 31-17. The Saints are Super Bowl champions. A crowd a mile and a half long greeted them at their airport when they when they land it.
It's Mardi Gras month, too, isn't it? Fat Tuesday
no,
coming?
No, it's 8 more days.
Okay.
But that's coming, yeah.
Still, like, 2 parades for them.
All right, let's go to Ron in Chester. You're next on 1050.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good, Ron. How you doing?
Good, good. Peyton Manning, his presence was basically, by the media, created like a godlike presence. He was put on the pedestal over the past 3-4 weeks, a month or 2 months, as being a godlike creation. He's a quarterback. He's due for good games. He's due for not good games. That being said, his legacy is the same as it was before the game. This is one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever played. He controls the game better and more intellectually than any quarterback who's ever played. He makes players better around him, as his brother said, Eli said, better than anyone who's ever, or close to who's ever played the game. So his legacy is the same. Just because one game is lost, because Reggie Wayne didn't make a sharp cut on his in route and kind of gave up on the route, doesn't make Peyton Manning any less of a quarterback than he's been.
Now, one second, Ron. Have you read anywhere that Reggie Wayne said he didn't make a strong cut on the in route?
No, that's the way I saw it.
Here's what I don't think his legacy has changed in terms of being one of the greatest ever. But to me, you can't throw that interception if you are the greatest quarterback of all time. You can't.
If that's a timing play, if you expect Reggie Wayne to be there, that's the play they run 1,000 times.
Okay, 1,000 times, and he never throws a pick on it. 1,000 times, their timing is always perfect. 1,000 times, he has the most pinpoint command and location of anybody I've ever seen. Looks like the Greg Maddux of football, and that's the time that he got it wrong. Well, I'm sorry. Then that takes him off the best ever pedestal. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that he's not one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever lived. But if you're going to say somebody is the greatest ever, they can't make mistakes. They can't make mistakes in a moment like that. Why are we putting it on Reggie Wayne? I love that. Did Reggie Wayne ever say I didn't cut hard? Well, why don't we give the credit to Tracy Porter that he made an unbelievable play and jumped the play? You heard what Mike Golic said. Tracy Porter was very much in view there. Why even throw the ball? It's not like he came out of nowhere. I'm not here to bury Peyton Manning, but I am here to take him off the top of the list. He's 9-9 in the playoffs. That's not good. That's 9-9 in the playoffs. And he threw a pick on a drive that would have tied the Super Bowl and put it into overtime.
But I need to know who's on the list. All right, Joe Montana, 4-0 in the Super Bowl. Crushed 3 of the 4.
3-0.
4-0. He is 4-0.
Well,
Cincinnati twice. Cincinnati beat twice. He beat Miami and he beat Denver.
Well, who did Steve Young beat?
He beat San Diego.
So they won 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he crushed 3 of the teams. I mean, he humiliated Denver.
Right.
And then the big touchdown drive, the John Candy drive that we talked about. And then the big moment was, of course, the catch in the championship game before the first Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So twice he was in moments where he needed to drive his team to help them win. So he was on a superior team that usually blew everybody out. So he didn't throw an interception in those two chances. But that doesn't
talked about this earlier. What were the great receivers he had other than Rice? Mike Clark is not an all-time great receiver. Freddie Solomon's not an all-time great receiver.
Well, John Taylor was very good.
Are they better than Marvin Harrison?
But those were great offensive line. Those were great 49er teams. And they ended up winning another Super Bowl when Steve Young took over. Also, another Hall of Fame quarterback. But I think the San Francisco 49ers have to go down as one of the great dynasties in the history of the National Football
League. Right. Okay? But you know what? It's funny. You give credit to the fact that that was a great dynasty, and you're still going to put Montana up there, but you completely last week dismissed Terry Bradshaw, who was 4-0 with a great team, too.
Absolutely great. But there was great players around him as well. The Pittsburgh Steelers were a tremendous team that had 2 Hall of Fame wide receivers. There's so many Hall of Famers. I mean, Stallworth and Swan, and then he had a Hall of Fame running back in Franco Harris. Offensive line, Mike Webster was the center. Well, goes to the Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame defense all over the place. I'm just looking at Peyton Manning, and I say, boy, it's all about him. He loses Edgerrin James, wins the Super Bowl. Loses Marvin Harrison, and they go 14-2, and they go to the Super Bowl. I mean, he had Marvin Harrison all those years, and they won the 1 Super Bowl. Had Edgerrin James all those years, and they couldn't win. Nobody was killing Edgerrin James for not being a great running back in those playoff games.
But again,
it's all about him. He has made this franchise. When it's all said and done, he is going to be the shining light of that franchise. Nobody else even comes close.
And nobody denies that. But when you're not, I don't understand how the manifestation of less than a great team always shows up in the playoffs. I mean, you could
take because
but you can rip through the schedule. But then when it comes to the playoffs, well, this way you rip through the playoffs. You convincingly beat the Ravens and the Jets, and yesterday it shows up.
No, because you didn't lose to some patty cake. I mean, you lost to a team that was 13-3.
I understand.
The two best teams all year were the Saints and the Colts, and they lost the game.
But don't you think that you have to grade on an unbelievable level when you say greatest ever? And he should not have thrown that pick if he's the greatest ever.
It's terrible. So if Joe Montana threw a pick in that Cincinnati
game. That's right. Then he would not have been the greatest ever. Those are the things that put somebody on the greatest ever list.
Or that Tom Brady allowed an inferior Giant team to beat them in a Super Bowl.
No, how about Tom Brady and the Ravens playoff game this past year? He imploded out the gate.
Well, we're talking about teams that aren't good, okay? Tom Brady doesn't have a great team behind him. But in that Giant game, didn't Tom Brady lead the team to a score before Eli had to?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, and then he threw a pass that Randy Moss should have caught, a desperation heave about 70 yards in the air. I'm not giving Brady that loss.
Bonnie makes a great point. I mean, they were blown out miserably in their own building by the Baltimore Ravens.
Right. So how many playoff losses does he have?
No,
he's 9-2.
It, but you're also talking about a Hall of Fame coach. You know, Bill Belichick is probably going to be remembered just as much as Tom Brady.
And Tony Dungy is going to be in the Hall of Fame
as a coach.
And those
three amazing, you know, fourth quarter, all he had to do was lead them to a field goal, not a touchdown like Peyton Manning was trying to do.
To your point about Tony Dungy, he had a great team in Tampa that didn't win the Super Bowl until the year after he left.
I get it.
And handed the reins to John Gruden.
You know he's still going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to end up being a Hall of Fame coach. Everybody loves him. So, I mean, Jim Caldwell, we don't even know who he is.
I don't know. You think Tony Dungy was the first African-American head coach to win a Super Bowl. And for that alone, he is induction worthy. Yeah. But in terms of his body of work,
Tony Dungy's not going down as an historic head coach.
But you know what? Nobody coaches Peyton Manning. Why are we all the same coach? He coaches himself.
But doesn't that add to his greatness?
Yes.
That he could be a coach?
That's why he's one of the greatest ever. So, not the greatest.
But who deserves a lot of the credit for Peyton Manning's development? Jim Caldwell. Because if you look at the statistics between Peyton Manning early in his career and where Caldwell came on board, he was one of the main reasons.
You guys are getting me wrong. I'm saying he's one of the greatest ever. But that interception takes him. He can end up winning four more Super Bowls. He's not the greatest ever.
But we're just talking. You mentioned Tom Brady. We all admit, and you said it when you asked Eli Manning, because we were talking about it before. You take Peyton Manning off of that team, and they're 6-10.
Right.
They're not a playoff team. They're so not a playoff team.
You took Tom Brady off the Patriots last year, and you put Matt Cassel, who never played a down in the NFL in his life, and they went 11-5. So doesn't that tell you the greatness of the New England Patriots? That maybe you have to at least think about the possibility that Tom Brady might have been along for the ride there.
I think you have to be able to differentiate. And it's difficult, and there are fine lines all over the place. Whether an individual player is worthy of the Hall of Fame based purely on the statistics, and whether you're a product of the system. Now, I think Tom Brady's an amazing quarterback, but referencing the point that Don just made, Matt Cassel, you saw what Matt Cassel did in Kansas City, and it wasn't anything like what he did in New England.
But I can read the difference between great teams. That's why I don't mention Troy Aikman as one of the greatest ever, because that was an unbelievable Cowboy team. But I think that Tom Brady had an awful lot to do with how great that New England Patriot team was. You know, we talk about great receivers. Tom Brady won two of his Super Bowls without Randy Moss. Didn't have great receivers. Guys like Gaffney and stuff like that. So, I mean, you could say his receivers are about equal or maybe even less than Peyton Manning's. We'll continue to talk about this. Right up against it, we'll go to 7. We have Trent Dilfer coming on at 6, 1050 ESPN New York.
Ready to take with you anywhere. It's the Michael K. Show podcast.
6:03 in New York City, and one of our favorite guests coming on with us right now, Trent Dilfer of ESPN, joins us on the Michael K. Show. Trent, how you doing?
Good. Did Bonnie just call me Trent Green?
Did you call him Trent Green, Bonnie?
Oh, my Lord.
Wow, good catch.
Good catch by you, Trent. Sorry.
Bonnie, that hurts.
Well, that's okay because you and Trent Green are two of my favorite quarterbacks ever.
Yeah, but Trent Dilfer has a Super Bowl ring.
Well, Trent Green could have had a Super Bowl ring if he didn't blow out his knee and let Kurt Warner take it.
Oh, I could have dated Jennifer Aniston if I wasn't fat and ugly.
Come on, who are you kidding? Stop it.
I could have hair if I didn't go bald.
That's right. There's a lot of things. My aunt could be my uncle if she had hair on her back. So let's talk about this game. All right? Now, the one thing that I've been driving home, and you might completely disagree with me, I was talking all week about you know, Peyton Manning is in the discussion for the greatest quarterback of all time. When you throw that pick in the fourth quarter and you're 9-9 in the playoffs, I'm sorry. You're still one of the greatest quarterbacks, but you cannot be the greatest quarterback of all time. Is he in that discussion for you? Was he ever, and has he dropped out?
Well, one, I'm a little uncomfortable with that discussion. I don't know why we're infatuated with having to pick the greatest ever. I'm not copping out of this discussion. I believe Peyton Manning has played the quarterback position better than it's ever been played. Now, does that mean he's greater than Joe Montana or Tom Brady or John Elway? I don't know. They're all so great. It's hard to say who's the greatest. Now, the reason I say I believe Peyton's played the quarterback position better than it's ever been played is because he's carried a much greater burden playing it than anybody else. What he is asked to do is unparalleled in professional sport. He's a coach. He's the quarterback. He's the catalyst for everything they do. He's the singular focus of every team that he plays against. He takes a 6-10 football team every season here. I mean, every season. And I would argue that maybe worse than 6-10 and turns them into 13-3 and gets them deep into the playoffs, gets the Super Bowl, or like he did a few years ago, wins the Super Bowl. You talk to other quarterbacks. Steve Young and I were in the Miami airport this morning getting ready to fly back to California, and we had this exact discussion of it's unfair what Peyton is asked to do. He's just asked to do too much, and because of it, you come down to last night's game, and he makes one mistake. He makes one, and it's not even that big of a mistake, the interception. It's more of a great play by Tracy Porter and the blitz the Saints bring that put pressure on Peyton. And now all of a sudden we're looking at the 9-9 playoff Super Bowl record instead of the greatness that is Peyton Manning. So I just think the burden is too great. I don't think he'll win a bunch of Super Bowls until they restructure how they do things as a football team and lighten the burden off of Peyton Manning to some degree.
I hear exactly what you're saying, Trent, but why does that all of a sudden manifest itself on a drive that would have put him as an immortal? And I'm sorry, the way I look at it, Joe Montana does not throw that interception. I don't think Tom Brady throws that interception. The people that would be in the discussion, John Elway probably doesn't throw that interception. That is a huge interception to throw. And I know it's a pretty, I don't think it was an extraordinary play by Porter. Maybe you think it was extraordinary. And we had a Mike Golick who said he was very much in Manning's sight the whole time. He knew he was there. So, I mean, if you're going to throw that interception, for all the spoils you get, you've also got to get some of the negatives if you don't come through in a big moment.
Well, I have a ton of respect for Mike Golick and a lot of other people that are commenting on, you know, what they saw from way up in the bleachers or on TV. I played the position not nearly as well as Peyton did. To be quite honest with you, anybody that can say that he should have known Tracy was going to intercept that is just an ignorant statement. He's throwing the ball on time, on rhythm, versus a blitz. That's his quick outlet. He's throwing it to a spot. There's a synergy that has to happen between him and Reggie Wayne. It's off a little bit, but the great play by Tracy Porter was the recognition of the formation, the motion, the timing of the drop and the route, the stem of the inside receiver. He processed a lot of information in a very short period of time. This is Tracy Porter. Was able to settle his feet, keep his eyes in the backfield, anticipate the exact breaking point on the ball so he didn't interfere with Reggie Wayne running through him to the ball. That was an extraordinary play by Tracy Porter. One of the harsh realities of playing quarterback in the National Football League is you can make good throws, and your receiver can be doing almost what he's supposed to do, and it can turn into an interception. That's why Peyton Manning, after the game, just said, hey, it was a great play by Tracy Porter. He gets it. Those things happen sometimes. You say Joe wouldn't have thrown the interception. Go back to the Cincinnati Bengals drive. Outside the touchdown pass, which wasn't even that remarkable of a throw, he dumped the ball underneath to Brent Jones, to Roger Craig. He hit a short little in route to Jerry Rice that went for about 30. He didn't do anything spectacular on that drive. Many drives that define quarterbacks in their finest moments are a product of the people around them doing things, breaking tackles, making spectacular plays on their own, and the quarterback gets all the credit for it. I don't want to sound like a total Peyton Manning apologist, but his greatness over the years is not diminished one bit because of what happened last night. In fact, I think what he was able to do, take a team that was 31 or 32 in the league in rushing, single game, carry the mantle of his football team, get them to where they were, never lose a game that he tried to win until the final game, I think is absolutely remarkable. One of the great performances we've ever seen by a quarterback in an entire football season.
Trent Dilfer is our guest here on the Michael Kay Show. I guess what I mean, though, and I hear everything that you're saying, and we just had Eli on who said that the team would be 6-10 without his brother's quarterback, and I agree with that. But why does it manifest itself in the Super Bowl? It didn't manifest itself against the Jets. It didn't manifest itself against the Ravens. Why in the Super Bowl? Are the Saints that much better than the two teams that I just mentioned? Are they that much better that they can hold them to 17 points?
Well, I did think the Saints were that much better. I mean, I said that throughout the week.
Even defensively than the Jets?
Well, I think what they do is what you saw with the Saints is they're not a great defensive football team, but they're a very good defensive football team when the team's one-dimensional. But when they can get you in must-pass situations, you're gonna, and the Colts did a pretty good job running the ball at times, but the Saints were patient. They got him into the 3rd-and-5 to 3rd-and-8 world. They got him into the world where they knew they were throwing the ball in single back set, 6-man protections, where you can break down the protections, give a lot of looks defensively, make the quarterback hesitate, make the receivers route recognize defenses and adjust their routes. When you live in a must-pass world in the NFL, you're one-dimensional is the way people put it. You can, Greg Williams type defensive coordinators, in this league that know how to limit points. They can't limit yards, but you can limit points. And eventually you can make the big play on defense that can help your team win the game, especially when you have a complementary offense. And what the Saints did offensively complemented what they did defensively last night. They played keep away to a certain degree. They had long sustained drives. The going for it on fourth down at the end of the first half was genius, because even if you kick a field goal there, you have to kick off the Peyton Manning and give him field position. You play the old school field position game. You slow the game down. All those things fit together, and that's why they're able to limit the Colts to points. I said all week long, I thought the Saints were a superior football team when you looked at all 53 people, the coaching staffs, the philosophy, everything going into it. The only hesitation you had in picking the Saints was Peyton Manning. But if you felt like you could make it a one-dimensional game, then I don't. Nobody that I talk to that really study these two teams is that surprised by what happened last night.
Talk to me about you talked about the second quarter when they went for the 4th-and-1, which I thought was a gutsy call and a good one. But then the Colts, who are so good at the last 2 minutes of the second quarter, all of a sudden they get 3 runs in a row. I know they were on the 1-yard line, but Peyton Manning could throw from anywhere. Why go 3 runs in a row there?
Yeah, I didn't like. It's funny because I had an interview this morning. Somebody said, "Well, they didn't run the ball enough," and yet everybody's mad at them because they ran 3 times in a row there. And I get it. I mean, I personally, if I was calling plays, I would have ran it on first down. I would have thrown it on second and third with Peyton Manning as my quarterback. But they didn't. And one of their Achilles' heels is must run situations. I talked about must pass situations, must run situations. They're not a good 3rd-and-short running football team. In fact, they went to a formation personnel group in a 2 tight end, 2 running back set that they're awful at. And that's what they called in the 3rd-and-1 and handed it to Brown on like an inside little dive play. And that's just not who they were and who they are. I was shocked by that play call. But I think sometimes, you get in those games and you want to do something that's uncharacteristic of who you are. And that situation really cost them. And you had to give the ball back to the Saints within 35 seconds. They were able to get 3 points out of it. So, I was taken back by that play calling decision, but like I said, you go into those games sometimes and you feel like you have to do something that you didn't do in the regular season, and it caught up with them.
Trent Dilfer is our guest here on the Michael Kay Show. How about the onside kick? Was that as gutsy as us that never played the game are seeing it? I mean, you've been there, you've played, you've won a Super Bowl. Could you believe he called that onside kick?
He made 2 of the gutsiest calls I've ever seen in back-to-back games. The NFC Championship game on 4th-and-1 from the Minnesota 43 in overtime going for it blew my mind. And we didn't talk about it enough, but I've never seen a coach go for it in that situation in overtime like he did against the Vikings. So that one, and then you back it up in the Super Bowl, open up the second half with the onside kick. I thought Drew Brees' comments after the game were very telling about the onside kick. He said, we weren't surprised because that's who we are. And ever since he got there, ever since Sean got there as the coach, you know, the focus, the mindset has been to be hyper aggressive, not reckless, but aggressive. And when you plan to be that way, it breeds a confidence in your football team, and you expect to make the play. I think if Tony Dungy made that call, or Caldwell made that call, coaches that are more conservative by nature, then it looks like a knee-jerk reaction. Then it looks like a panic move. But when the coach is so hyper-aggressive to start with, I think the team says, yeah, okay, our coach isn't afraid to be who we are in the biggest moments of games. And they just grow to expect that type of play calling. And then I really believe that players respond to that, and they feel like it's their responsibility to make it work, because their coach has been doing this since the day he showed up at the complex.
He was somewhat disrespected, I guess, in the process over the last couple of weeks, Trent, because we talk so much about Peyton Manning. But where does this put Drew Brees among the best quarterbacks in the NFL now?
Well, you know, we played yesterday on Sunday Countdown. We had this discussion. We used the word elite, and I don't know what that means. I thought Drew Brees going into this game was one of the most. I'll steal a term from Steve Young that I love. I think it paints such a beautiful picture of quarterbacking. He was as artistic as a quarterback as we've seen in the last 10 years. What I always said was he was the best passer in the league. He could manipulate a football. He could pass the football as well as anybody in the NFL. Now, when you attach Super Bowl champion to him, now you can say he's one of the great quarterbacks. And we all kind of knew this was going to happen because he's such a great leader. His intangible qualities are there with Brady and Manning and Roethlisberger and the other greats of the game. But this just validates it. To go from a great passer, an elite passer, to an elite quarterback is simply being able to hoist that Lombardi Trophy up with your left arm at the end of the Super Bowl. And he accomplished that. Now he's in the discussion. I'll write an article next year going into the season like I did this year about who the greats in the game are. And he'll be at the top of the list with Brady and Manning because he's won the game. And Rivers will be the next guy. You know, Philip Rivers is the next guy that's going to be able to say that. It's just a matter of time before these guys' greatness surface with the Lombardi Trophy, and last night was Drew's moment.
You teed me up perfectly. Let's spin it forward here. We've got the odds to win next year's Super Bowl. So the Colts are the favorite. Chargers are 8-1. Then you got the Patriots and the Saints. Off the top of your head, who you liking?
Golly, well, we never have time to even digest what just happened.
No, of course not. Would you rather talk about this stuff or free agency in the uncapped year? What's more fun?
Yeah, that's true. I'd rather talk about this. The Cowboys will contend in the NFC. I think the Saints obviously will be. You know, they have a lot of free agents. They're going to have some issues. The Saints are keeping that team together. I think the Packers will make a run. With it being such an offensive league, I think you got Packers, Cowboys, Saints, and the NFC. AFC, I'd agree with that. I'd go Colts and Chargers, and I think the Steelers will be back. If I had to pick a winner for next year, I think we're soon to have a Super Bowl team that hosts a Super Bowl. And because of that, I think the Cowboys may be hosting it next year in Jerry Land or Jerry World, wherever we call it. And I'll go on a limb and say the Cowboys win it next year.
Trent, we thank you for all of your participation with us all year. You're always really great to have on. We thank you a lot because I know you're busy.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right, have a great offseason.
We'll see you.
All right, be good. That's Trent Dilfer.
This has been the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.